Hello, everybody, and welcome to the episode of Making Seamless Sales. My name is Art Fromm, and this is episode 4, coming to you live from Mars, Pennsylvania, just north of Pittsburgh. I've mentioned that on the shows previously, and I mentioned that we actually have a flying saucer in our little tiny borough of Mars. And somebody said, "Do you really have a flying saucer there?" I said, "Yeah, we do." And I think they used to move it around a little bit, but the little town is so small, it's probably pretty obvious where it was. Anyway, it's in a fixed location now. And by the way, we are officially, and I had to look this up because I'd heard this and I was just curious. We are officially the only town in the United States that's named Mars. There are a couple of other locations that have used the Mars name, but they don't qualify as cities or towns. So, for example, there's a Mars, California, but it's an unincorporated community. There's a Mars, Texas, and a Mars, Nebraska, but they're both ghost towns. And there's other locations that have Mars in the name, but we are the only one that's actually named Mars. And I'll tell you why that's important in just a minute as well. So thanks, everybody that's joining. If you're on one of the social medias, please drop a note in the chat. Where you're calling from, and my producer Jesse will let me know where you're calling from so I can give you a shout out. So we appreciate that. Thank you everybody very much for that. And also, if you're watching on the recording, thank you for doing that. And then regardless, please like, share, and comment and subscribe in whatever channel you're in, because we're in a whole bunch of different channels. Last week was a great show, episode 3 with Candy Gray, who is in the unique position of being involved with all aspects of the sale, from initial qualification and implementation all the way through to expansion in her role as national account manager. So she was talking about the way that she gets engaged all the way from the beginning through the end and then renewals. And we did talk a little bit about, I'd ask a question about whether or not she would, you know, what it's like to be in a position where you're setting yourself up for this long-term relationship and everything, and if she would ever walk away from it. And I talked with her about that, because her answer was, no, I would never walk away. And she was answering it, which is right, is that she will not walk away from somebody she's working with. And where I was trying to go with it a little bit was, what about when you get a prospect that's not a good fit? And she said, oh yeah, for sure. She goes, definitely qualification means that if there's not a good fit for me as a national account manager, she has others in her company that might be a better fit. It might be a different division or whatever. Or she said, you know, I'll just let them go to the competitor and keep the competitor busy while I work on what I need to work on. So I just wanted to clear that up, is that maybe we're on a little bit different frequencies. I think I wasn't quite clear with my question. For today's show, which we're going to get to after the first break, is with Michelle Afshar. She's the head of global enablement for Darktrace, which is an active AI security platform. Michelle just delivered an amazing sales kickoff in Las Vegas for pre-sales, sales, and post-team sales members. And I had the privilege of delivering a couple of afternoon sessions, one for pre-sales team and one for the pre-sales and sales combined, which is why I wanted to get Michelle on the show, because she's all about helping pre-sales and sales work together and has ideas about what that evolution might look like and things like that. And Michelle has extensive experience helping sales and pre-sales in her other role. So we'll get to that after the first break. A couple other quick announcements. If you haven't already, please check out the events on the teamsalesdevelopment.com page. That's where I have all of my events, previous webinars, all kinds of resources there. I just offer that for all of you to check that out, learn more about different things. There's the show page on there, so you could take a look at all the shows that have been already broadcast, for which you can watch the replays, and then the shows that are coming up as well. Also, I wanted to mention that one of the things that's on there is that there's a new compilation book called Business, Life, and the Universe. And I know those of you listening can't see this, but everybody else on the live stream and the video streams and the recording can see this book. It's Business, Life, and the Universe. It's a compilation book that is made up of a bunch of different authors. I'm going to be in book 15 that's coming out, and it's available for pre-sale right now. Now, why I'm mentioning this, and this goes back to my comment about Mars, it's so cool because each book is got a very famous person in it that does the foreword. And in my particular book, it's going to be John Gray, which is Men Are From Mars and Women Are From Venus. And I knew it was meant to be when I had the opportunity to get in this book with him, because I'm obviously a man from Mars. So I got a little bit of a tie in there. But my chapter is going to be entitled, and I think I'm chapter two in the book. It is called The Art of Persuasion. And the idea is, as we've talked about on some of the other shows, even though we're talking often about big business-to-business sales and enterprise-type sales and everything like that, this also, a lot of these concepts apply to just persuasion and influence. And so the chapter that I wrote for this book is all about how we can, in a similar way to the way that John Gray talks about men being from Mars and women from Venus, meaning we need to understand each other and find out how to communicate together properly. Same thing with sales or persuasion. It's about learning what the other person, how they're wired, what is it that their motives are, their motivations, what is it that we want it to be all about them. So how can we make that happen? And so my chapter is about, in any type of persuasion, what are ways we can take a look at things like social style or risk sensitivity, which really comes into play a lot with somebody deciding to move forward or not? Because if there's too much of a perception of risk, they're not going to want to move forward, whether it's going to a movie or going to a restaurant, or whether it's, buying a multi-million dollar information management system or security system like what Michelle offers. So please check that out. It'd be great if you could just help us out with the pre-sale and order that. I think it's supposed to be coming out sometime in September, and that'll be a fun little addition to what I'm trying to do to give back and share some ideas and things like that. So a couple of other things that I just wanted to cover really quickly is when it comes to the idea of our whole series, we're now on, this is episode four. So what has happened is we've built from some basic concepts into more intense concepts. Today, we're going to talk a lot about pre-sales and sales working together. Next week, my guest is really going to dive into more of the CRM system and also agentic AI. So this means things like the way that AI, we all have heard AI, and we've maybe used ChatGPT or things like that, but it's going to be AI and digging into the way that that can help with running a sales process, can help with allowing you to reach your customers and things like that, and then record all of that information so that we have all that at our disposal. So when we move forward with this, of course, what we'll wind up doing is adding on to it. And today we'll wind up with talking with Michelle about the way that those can work together better. I also want to encourage everybody, we've got the segment at the end where you can ask some questions. I have a couple questions that came in from some viewers about a couple of situations involving sales and pre-sales. So we'll get to that at the end of the session as well. Now, one of the big themes of this show, Making Seamless Sales, is the idea of the SE and the AM, or pre-sales and sales working together better. And what I found when it comes to doing that is that very often these teams are in different silos. So whether it's a very large corporation or a relatively small one, there's just been a history of this where sales and pre-sales grew up a little bit separately. I talked about that somewhat on my first show. I started as what was called an application engineer because back in the day, you needed somebody who was very technically savvy to be able to run the solution. Like, it was very complicated, that required a lot of programming and other things like that. The salesperson, there's no way they could have figured that out. So as an application engineer, we were there to show the technology. The salesperson was there as the front end to do all the rest of it. As time has evolved and as the business world has changed, we're moving more from really, really complex systems, of which there's many still, but the way that they're implemented is a little bit easier. And now what's happening is the focus is on more implementation. There's what's called SaaS. If anybody's familiar with that, it's, if you're not familiar, it's sales or software as a service. It's a variety of different things. Infrastructure as a service, security as a service. And the idea is you subscribe to it. So the customer is subscribing to it. And therefore, when we do what used to be a sale of a tangible item or a software solution, now it's more of getting somebody signed up and they begin to consume it. And as they consume it, now you're generating your revenue. Now, why is that important? Because before, a lot of the sales were a once and done. So you work together, sales engineer, account manager, you get the sale done, the account manager goes on to the next deal. Well, now it's more about the continuum all the way through client success. And that's one of the reasons why it's so important that now there's a focus on go-to-market, meaning automated systems, sales engineers that are helping with doing demos or answering requests for proposals or helping clients see things a different way that maybe they hadn't seen things before. And then working that all the way through to the point where you've now got a customer that's not just buying something, but they're signing up and committing to consume. So our goal shifts from selling to enabling the buyer. The goal shifts from trying to push a solution and force the sale to getting them to want it and to desire it. And that's why it's so important now. It's not such separate functions and silos. It's more of getting these roles interdependent and so that it looks like one entity, and therefore the friction goes down for sales, the success goes up for the client. And now when it comes to renewals and expansion, it's more likely that they trust the people they're working with and we can have those longer term relationships. So that's what we're going to talk a little bit with Michelle about after the break and explore ways that she has seen other companies that she's worked at with how that works, what are the ways that they can work together, and to really make that from the beginning all the way through to enablement of the buyer so that that can be more successful. And that will mean more business, more revenue, higher margins, and all that when we're focused on client success. So we'll come back here in a little bit for a commercial break. When we come back, we're going to be talking with Michelle Afshar. So get your get your notepad ready so you can take down some great notes on what Michelle is going to share for how she helped the company she's worked with to do that. We'll see you back in a few minutes.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Bronku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a purpose-driven individual looking for deeper healing, clarity, and growth? Welcome to the Expansion Room, a transformative space for purpose-driven individuals. I'm Siobhan Lurice, host, licensed therapist, and coach. Join me every Wednesday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.
All right, everybody, welcome back from the break. And I would like to introduce to you Michelle Afshar. So hello, Michelle.
Hi, Art. Thank you so much for having me here.
Absolutely. So glad you're here. So everybody, Michelle is a dynamic leader in sales enablement whose career spans major innovation hubs such as Darktrace, Zoom, and she's been at Palo Alto Networks. As the global head of enablement at Darktrace, Michelle has a track record of transforming how pre-sales and sales works together. I know she loves learning technology and helping people, which is the perfect combination for sales enablement. I think I've heard you say that before, Michelle. And so again, everybody, welcome Michelle to the show. And to get us started, Michelle, can you just briefly share how you got to where you're at and a little bit about your experience in sales enablement?
Probably for a whole other episode, Art, but I actually thought I was going to first be a surgeon, like a heart surgeon, and that didn't work out. And then I sold cars to pay for college, and I ended up selling a car to a CEO who gave me my first job in sales. And so 25 years ago, I was an SDR, and today I get to lead and scale and build really high-performing teams. So it's been a crazy path to get there, but I do really love working with all the different teams that we get to enable at some of these amazing companies.
Yeah, you never know where your interactions are going to lead, right?
Exactly.
That's really cool. So you definitely have an appreciation for the pre-sales function and the importance of including them in as part of the team. Where does that passion come from?
I think in enablement, the highest form of like, I did a good job, is when the technical teams come to you and say, that was really good training. I say that because they tend to be, they have a really high caliber for what they consider to be good. I think if you know most pre-sales engineers or you know more technical type of people, they are very smart. They are very capable. They can understand complex things very quickly. And so I'm just a like bubbly sales girl with my background. And when I leave a training and I get that kind of remark from that team, I always feel like I might have really made an impact. Over the years, what I've seen is that those teams tend to be the ones that are underdeveloped, that they kind of just get passed over because they are capable and they are really smart groups. Where I've seen the needle move the most, and this is what I saw at Palo Alto Networks, is what I saw at Zoom, was when we invested in our solution engineering teams, when we invested in our technical teams, the return was so much greater than when we were doing some of the other programs with some of the other groups. And so my passion really came from it being a challenging thing to be good at. And it came from seeing the amazing return you can get when you invest in this group of people that tends to be overlooked.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, when I was initially, I was a SE, you know, when I got into sales roles, I was an SE type role and I was running a team of SEs and I had been doing some sales and things like that at other companies. And the particular company I was at, just sort of what we call flea dip the SEs into the sales training. So it was like, put them in with the salespeople. And then, but they'd come out going, well, why do I really care about all that stuff? And not only that, there's a lot that I need that I don't have. And then from the sales perspective, I don't think that helps either, because now they're not getting somebody that's fully developed in the things that they really need. So, you know, there's been studies that have shown that just getting sales and pre-sales to work together better. And it's not just pre-sales coming over to sales. It's sales coming over pre-sales. It's that true blend and the combination in the middle. It shows that teams that are doing that, as you said, are like 37% higher in sales revenue and win rate and things like that, just because they're coming together. So you're spot on in terms of that investment is paying off for everybody. Not
and
just
I think the major people. Challenges most companies face is that alignment. And that alignment tends to be what people plan for. Is like, if I train the sellers in room A and I train the technical teams in room B, somebody's going to figure it out. Mm-hmm. It's me. Like, it's my job to figure it out and to be really prescriptive and to be very thoughtful in how I want the two teams to interact. And so I think the teams that are more successful are not just seeing the SEs as like these demo machines and the sellers as like the charming people that take you out to go golf and eat a steak, right? They're designing this intentional relationship and alignment between the two teams. And then that's why you see so much success for the teams that get it and do it and do it right.
When you've seen it not go right, what are some of the symptoms of that? You know, what are some of the challenges or negative impact when they're not aligned that you've seen?
So if I break it up, the challenges for the seller are they tend to get frustrated. They're confused. Like, what's my job? What is the SE supposed to do? They're dropping the ball. Maybe their deals are going to stall. It's a lot of confusion of like who should do what and who owns what, I think, from a selling perspective. And then if you think about it from the pre-sales role, there's confusion or there's challenges in like, I'm not valued. Like, I'm just here because I'm the brains. Like, and you get burnt out. You get tired of being the savior of the deal and doing all the work and like really proving value to the customer. And you kind of start to feel undervalued in a relationship which truly does value you and should value you. And then I think for the customer, the prospect, they're just like, what's going on? Like, you don't understand my business and you want me to trust you and you want me to spend all this money and these two people don't talk to each other. So I think when you look at the challenges, like, there's confusion, there's a lack of understanding of who should do what. And that just makes a customer and a prospect inherently not trust you. Because if you don't have it together as a team, why would I want to continue and why would I want to do business with you? So, like, it sounds so simple to just make those two teams get along, but it does take a lot of work to get the two to work like hand in hand and be like the seamless group that should work together.
Right. Yeah. And studies have shown too that the amount of time that we get human interaction with a client is continuing to decrease because everybody's doing self, you know, exploration and they're finding stuff out on the internet. And again, with some of these AI bots and things, they can do a lot more research. So the time in front of the client is reduced down a lot. And therefore that's premium time that we can't afford any missteps in that. It's got to be sharp and quick. And we also know that pre-sales, typically SEs, come with inherent trust. Sales doesn't. So the ability to move together like that can help remove that. Because otherwise, you're right, the whole experience isn't going to be good for the customer. And it's got too much friction internally as well for the sales team. So given that, and that you've seen that, and this has been a theme throughout your whole career, is what types of things have you done in Darktrace or previous roles to help bring this together so that it is working more as a team and the benefits that come from that?
So a couple of things I think that are maybe just fundamentals, but they really help in bringing these two teams together, is you don't have to have a 300-page playbook, but you should have some kind of way that you want these two teams to interact. So you might be a smaller company or you might be a massive, you know, billions of dollars organization. But if someone can put together a thoughtful way, an intentional way that you want your customers to experience this selling process from a seller through the technical kind of value, showing us what the product does, and you can put that on paper, what you can do is build this joint plan. I think that we use this term a lot and we use this in the training we've done together, is that there's this concept of a handoff. And that implies I only do what I need to do and then I got to flip it over to you. And I think that that's probably not the best type of relationship to have. So a lot of the times I try to get people to move from a concept of a handoff to a concept of a partnership. If I am a rep and I see my SE as my partner, that's very different than the person I hand off something to. And so those are the types of facilitated workshops, active role plays that I like to build. Because I think if you can structure them less around this like very transactional, you do this and you do this, and you teach them how to become partners. I think you can foster really great relationships. The other thing is, sellers are naturally more, well, you said, like, they're not as trustworthy, but maybe they're a little bit more charming, right? But they need to tell a story. What I think the SEs are really good at is telling a story, but they might not necessarily be as charming sometimes because they are so smart and they're so technical.
Mm-hmm.
The one thing I think that brings these two teams together is storytelling. Now, the sessions should be run differently for the two types of roles. But when I think about like a foundation, when I think about a shared skill, when I think about any solid duo that I've ever worked with of a really rock star SE and a really, really amazing rep, they know the story that they want to tell. They know how they show up as partners. They practice it. They're intentional with it. So for me, it's like, how do I create this environment where they can practice, they tell that story that they have that's unique to them, and then like give them a chance to really practice it together so they can get good at it.
Yeah, I mean, it reminds, speaking of golf and stuff like that, I mean, it's with your golf clubs in the background, it's like any, you know, you could use a sports show or something like that. You have maybe one main commentator and then you have other people that come in with the color and all that, but it's just like one big experience and it's so much richer and everybody's on the same page. I heard somebody one time say, you know, what do you think the percentage of the ownership of the salesperson is, and what's the percentage of the ownership of the SE or the pre-sales when it involves sales? And somebody goes, oh, well, it's probably about 50-50, but since the sales has a little more say, maybe they're 51% and the SE is 49%. And I don't think so. And what you're saying is it's really like 100% and 100%. I mean, there's not a division of labor. It's an interdependency that requires everybody to look like one entity. In fact, the segment at the end of this where a couple people wrote in, this is part of that theme, is it just comes off very unorganized for the customer and then a lot of frustration internally. So whereas sales doesn't have inherent trust because of, you know, whatever, this allows that trust to be built. And at the same time, because the SE does have inherent trust, we don't want them to lose it. So I think what you're saying helps with strengthening both, and they can work off. And you know what? We need different. So we need different personalities. We need the technical and we need the business. We need the facts and we need the fun, and blending those together can make for a great combination. Awesome. I know also, and we're coming up to commercial here, but real quick. So what is there something that you wish that you would have learned or done sooner that you found out later on that it's like, oh gosh, I wish I would have been
I wish I wouldn't have been scared of the technical teams. They're actually very friendly. Like it sounds scary and I know it can be very intimidating, but I also find it to be very rewarding. So it's kind of like any new thing for most people. It's like, just get in there, get to know that audience, get to know what's important to them, and then just go do it. And you'll find they tend to be a very welcoming, great group to work with. I wish I had done it sooner.
There you go. Yeah. And I think it's vice versa too, where sometimes it seems like sales might be too intimidating for pre-sales or SEs. But when you, like you said, when it's a partnership, the whole goal is to figure out how to work things together. So that takes a lot of the pressure off because you have a common goal instead of trying to figure out, you know, what each is doing. Awesome. Well, we'll continue after the break and we'll get into a little bit more details here with Michelle. So stay tuned, everybody, as we start to think about what it is that sales and pre-sales can do working together and some of the benefits that have come from that, and also your vision of where you see this going. So we'll be back after a short break here. Misalignment within your sales team or with the client stalls deals and creates unnecessary friction for you and the client, resulting in up to 37% lower win rate. If you're in pre-sales, sales management, or sales enablement, and you'd like to increase revenues, win rate, margins, client satisfaction, and stay competitive, this show is for you. Hi, I'm Art Fromm, host of the Making Seamless Sales Show. Please join me live Thursdays at 7 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
Hey Hey, everybody, it's Tommy D, the nonprofit sector connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A-Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A-Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
All right. Welcome back, everybody. We're talking with Michelle Afshar from Dark Trace, Global Enablement Responsibilities. And we're talking about the way that Michelle helps the team feel like a team, from pre-sales to sales. And I would even say extending into post-sales as well, because I saw some of that in action as we were working together, where that can continue the customer's journey, the client's journey. What do you think are some reasons maybe that it isn't more natural that pre-sales and sales would just be working together?
I think the kind of older school thought of how people should learn to do their jobs has been very siloed. I think if I even think back to a decade ago when I first started enablement, you didn't have like these playbooks that were across the teams. So I think learning has typically been done, like, I train my peers, I know what I need to do, I just do my job really well. So the silos are created because also, like, what people need to do. There's different outcomes for each of the roles. I think the world we're moving into, I think with AI, I think with people doing their own research, I think with people coming to deals or coming to these teams with their own perspective, means that our roles have to change and we have to be far more collaborative as teams when we show up. So it's a very like old school mentality, and the world buying, selling, being like doing demos, everything has changed. And in this modern world, there really isn't a silo. Like, you're showing up as one team, one message, like one voice that makes sense and is going to build that trust with your customer.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And I think, I mean, there is a lot conspiring against teams working together better. And for one thing, it's that usually it's two different organizations, and they often don't come together except for at a very high level. So it relies on everybody else in between. So anybody that's listening that has, you know, those silos, that's one thing, is that at the management level is to make sure that you are doing everything possible to cross-pollinate and think of ways you can work together instead of it not, you know, only coming together at the very top. And I think that the other thing is that when it comes to the way that resources are allocated, sometimes that creates a lot of friction in the process too.
They're paid different. They're regarded different, right? Like, these are two very, it's apple and orange, like to its core. These are two totally different groups of people who have to work together. So there's so many reasons why it makes sense that there is an alignment every time.
Mm-hmm. So what, when you have been able to do some of these things, and if you can get into maybe a little bit of what would be some of the philosophies or the ways even you would try to train them, for example, a full-blown thing for sales and maybe a lighter version of the same thing for pre-sales, and then also having them together, doing some things together in your enablement sessions where you just break those barriers down by the fact that they're all in the same room together.
So I'm a little bit of a renegade, and I don't know if I do things a little different. If you know me, you know I can be a little wild and crazy when it comes to learning.
Yeah.
I only put people together in blended roles when it's really around awareness. Like if I need people, like if I need them to buy into something, if I need them to hear something for the first time, if I need them to understand where we're going, I think everyone should be in the same room and hear the same message and rally behind the purpose. I actually think training should be done differently. So if it's a new concept, my material for the sellers is so different than what I need it to be for the technical team. And I start there. Like you should have separate journeys for these two teams. You should bring them together in the application and in the practice. And I think a lot of teams do what's easy, and I've done it before and I haven't had the resource, or I've been like a one woman show and I've had to just do it all together. You put everybody in the same room in the same training and you make put them in a breakout and you just pray that it works and they figure it out on their own. But I think the optimal thing is get everybody bought in, take them through what they need to know for their specific roles, and then let them come together. Give them the chance to practice, not in front of a customer. I hate practice in front of a customer. Like, go role play. Go do the activity. Go take a second and figure out how you're going to do this together. And then, like, give them a chance to digest it and put it into their day-to-day and what they need to do in their roles.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And I it goes both ways, right? So the sales learns a little bit of the awareness part of what SEs are doing, and the SEs learn a little bit of awareness of what sales is doing, because you have to have that overlap.
And you'll find like the teams, like I'll make all the training that I've ever made at any company, I make available for both. There are SEs who want to sharpen their selling skills and they'll show up. And they're some of the best students in that sales class, right? They're in that cohort. They're raising their hands. They're super engaged, and vice versa. Sometimes I have these more junior reps who have this thirst for technical knowledge and they're signing up. They want to be more like an SE one day. They want to get the certifications. They want to be this trusted advisor. So giving people, you know, because they're different, that doesn't mean that you have to stop people also from giving them access. Like there, you will be surprised by the amount of people who will enjoy getting access to the other's curriculum and training too.
Yeah. And in fact, some of the most successful SEs or AEs came from the other role because they lived it. They saw it. They understand what it is. They have the empathy for what that's all about. And I love it when that happens, because you just have a more well-rounded team, and then they could be examples to others as well. So what benefits have you seen? And I guess there's a bunch of different buckets here. Like, what are the benefits when this happens for SEs? What are the benefits for sales? What about you as enablement, your company, the client? What are some of those benefits for those kind of buckets?
So for the sellers, the benefit is confidence. And nothing is more successful than a confident seller. And so when you have this partnership, when they know their right hand is there with them, they know the story, they know how they're going to work together, they walk into that room and they don't feel like I'm the face, I'm the beauty, and the brains is coming next to me, right? They feel confident. Your customer is going to feel the confidence. That builds trust. You become to be like this differentiated team because of that leader, that seller has that confidence in them. I think for the SE, they're motivated differently. So when there is this alignment, they tend to be like less cranky. That's probably the nicest way I could put it on a live show. But a happy SE, a purpose-driven, fulfilled technical resource, you can't stop them from working. You can't stop them from wanting to go to talk to every customer and prospect in the world, right? So like a fulfilled, happy, valued SE, like you got to tell them to take a vacation. So I feel like that is a benefit. For your customers, they're like, these people know exactly what they're talking about. It's not just the product, right? You buy the product because it's good. You buy from the people that you trust. Mm-hmm. So the customers are like, heck yeah, great product, amazing team. And if I'm going to get this pre-sales, right, before I get the product, it's going to be amazing post-sales. Like, I already have that confidence. Mm-hmm. So I think it does a lot for that. For a enablement, you know, it's almost like, you know, sometimes people will ask me, like, how many kids do you have? I have one son, but there are days I feel like I have 1,000 right now, right? Like at Dark Trace. And you feel really proud. We get to share win stories every couple weeks here at Dark Trace. And I hear this alignment. I hear people working together. I hear the intention. I hear them using the playbook. I hear them sharing these stories. There's a sense of pride for me that goes all the way up to the top, right? Like, it's working. It's the product works. The company works. It's really, really great. So I think it's for enablement, I think it's like that sense of like, okay, we have them figured out. We gave them what they needed, and they like are using it and they like it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And without going into too much detail, I know one of the things that you do is, even when it comes to like a sales kickoff or whatever like that, the SEs and the sales people are all together. I mean, it's pretty amazing. And awarding, you know, everybody in some ways just as much, if not more, when it comes to that recognition. Because as you say, they're wired differently. Sales is very wired based on, you know, money in particular. But SEs are often, you know, they feel rewarded based on recognition and that they're doing good things. It's not necessarily about money for everybody. And then you mentioned about the client. I think that the way that somebody like Dark Trace is set up is going to be differentiated in the experience for the client. And that could be the difference between them selecting you or selecting somebody else. Because if they're dealing with a team that's not organized versus a team that seems like they're working together, that alone could be the differentiator. Because there's so much now that's just the noise level that everything is like table stakes and expected to be equal. That could be a huge differentiator. So let's see, we just did get a comment here. Let me just see what it says. SEAE, I've seen, but the other way around in my experience, at least, is a mythical beast. So, I mean, I've seen both, and SEAE, I think, is probably more prevalent. But there are those AEs that don't like, and I think I heard you say this on another podcast, about the quota, that can sometimes be too much. And so some AEs might not want the quota and they want to go back to a role where they're really doing something very productive. So I appreciate the viewer making that comment. And I think it could be a little bit of both, depending.
I hate a quota. That's why I'm in enablement. Like, mm-hmm. I was really good at sales. I was so good, Art. Like, if I think back, I was good. I probably could have had a great, successful career. That quota, starting at zero,
mm-hmm.
Like every time you felt good, you start back at zero. I couldn't do it. Yeah. I wasn't smart enough to be an SE. I couldn't do it. That I couldn't do either. So I ended up in enablement, which so far has proven to be wonderful.
Yes, yes. You're spreading the capabilities out and your love to everybody. I love it. So just real quick, we have about a minute left here. Very quickly, what's your vision then of what you see as the future of sales and pre-sales working together?
I think if the companies that are going to win turn their SEs into these like strategic advisors and they turn their reps into more of a technical seller, I think that's the like winning formula. The companies that invest in that, the companies that actually do that, that train their teams to do that, I think they're going to be ahead. I think they're going to feel the difference. It's going to match the market. It's going to match what people are asking for. Yeah. I think the other thing is like just figuring out how to incentivize people, like figure that out, do it really, really well, because it's very different across all of the companies.
Yeah. And just that alone, studies, like I said, show 37% difference. I mean, that's money that's laying on the table right now. I mean, just that alone
give it to the sellers, take some of the money and buy the SEs some burritos like that. Yeah. You could do something like that really quickly.
I love it. Well, Michelle, thank you so much for being here. Everybody, you can go to the show page on teamsalesdevelopment.com under events. Check out Michelle further, and you'll be able to watch the recording and everything. What's the best way to contact you or connect with you, Michelle?
LinkedIn is great.
All right. We've got Michelle's LinkedIn connection on the webpage as well. So again, thank you so much. I really appreciate it. It's a pleasure being here and working with you in real life too.
For having me, Art. It was great.
My pleasure. Thank you very much. All right, we'll be back after this commercial break.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Ready to serve up success with a splash? Hi, I'm Bruce Kramer, a.k.a. the Corporate Cockroach.
I'm the Renaissance Woman, Angie Snowball.
And I'm your strategy doctor, Dr. Navtej Dasanjh, inviting you to serving up success with a splash.
Join us as we shake things up with real talk and real strategies centered around awareness, action, and accountability.
And yes, there really is a cocktail involved. Please join us and sip your way to success.
Serving up success with a splash, where wisdom meets happy hours. Cheers!
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC at www.talkradio.nyc. Now broadcasting 24 hours a day.
All right, everybody, welcome back. And again, great segment there from Michelle. I would recommend going back, watching it, and stealing all those ideas for your company, because they are the secret to success, where everything is just kind of a blur now and may seem like it's very similar when you're dealing with different type of companies. So that's a way to be differentiated. Did have another question come in on the live stream. So the question is, who's responsible for the playbook, marketing, sales, or enablement? And this would be the playbook that typically implements a sales methodology. It's usually the things that define the sales stages. It's usually the thing that helps sales and pre-sales with the personas so that they know who they're working with and things like that. I've seen a variety of different things. Generally speaking, it's going to be driven by a combination of marketing and enablement, where enablement is the liaison, if you will, for sales. And so marketing and enablement will develop it and have the responsibility for putting that together. And then enablement rolls it out to sales. Now, none of this should be done in a vacuum. It should be done with sales buy-in, but the bulk of the work is done there. And then it's up to sales to implement it with enablement's help. So I see enablement right in the middle there, being involved with all of it. And that's what Michelle's so good at, is making sure that all that happens very, very smoothly. So thanks for that. I appreciate the question. And by the way, everybody, you could put in additional comments or go to the teamsalesdevelopment.com page. And if you go to the contact portion of the page, feel free to put questions in there. I'd really like to hear from you as far as things that you're up against, comments or feedback for the show. And certainly, as we said, like, share, subscribe to the show that wherever you're watching it from, because that'll help spread the word for others. And please do that. That brings us to, and this is, again, where we can have the questions coming from the audience, what I call, it's a little cheeky, I don't know if I'm still comfortable with this, but the Ask Artie or the Dear Artie section. And it's after the Dear Abby, where people wrote in their life issues to the columnist, and then she would answer the, you know, people's life challenges. So Dear Artie is the section where people can write in your sales challenges. And two of them that I had that I wanted to share with you today are kind of related, and they're also, of course, related to the topic that we had. I'll do each one separately, and then you can take the nuggets out of each one of them as you see fit. The first one comes from a writer who says, in our company, the sales and pre-sales teams are operating in silos. Sounds familiar, right? I mean, we literally just talked about that. With different objectives, here's the key, with different objectives leading to misaligned messages and inconsistent client experiences. Sounds familiar, right? Some of the issues this has caused us is clients were wondering if they were talking to different companies while interacting with the various team members, which diminished trust, reduced deal sizes due to inconsistent value propositions, and a lack of traction. So what can be done about that? And, you know, Michelle gave a lot of good ideas on that. And I would just add a couple specific things here is, one thing is that I think can unify everybody is the focus on the buyer and on the buyer's journey. All too often we're too, even playbooks are very often just about the sales process. What a playbook should say is, what is the buyer doing? And then what sales motions do we have as a result of that? So when we're focused on the buyer journey as a common goal, everybody can unite behind that in order to equip the buyer for success. I think the concept of shared ownership and accountability. In my book, Making Seamless Sales, I do talk about the idea of a pyramid where you've got higher level people that would be more strategic. And then, and this is talking about the client, higher level people, C-level people and the client that are more strategic. And then at the bottom of the pyramid, which just represents that there's more of these people, is the implementers, the IT department, the infrastructure, that type of thing, which tend to be more technical. I mean, that's just the nature of business, right? The IT is supplying services to the rest of the organization. The C-level is providing the revenues and the shareholder value. Well, on that, if you think about the sales team, they need to definitely be completely aligned at the top of the pyramid and then have somewhat diminishing direct involvement and even not so much complete knowledge or expertise in those areas, because on the other side of the pyramid, we have the sales or the SEs, the pre-sales organization. They're the opposite. They own everything up to and including the middle and then have a little bit diminishing involvement. The key point is right in the middle, it's a sweet spot. So shared ownership of how are we connecting technology to strategic business outcomes and how are we addressing strategic business outcomes with the technology that we're providing. So that will help with unifying the message. And then I think some interdependent responsibilities where it is known that, you know, there's a little bit of divide and conquer, but in that middle sweet spot, everybody should have the same message. So sales should be able to connect the two and pre-sales should be able to connect the two. That way, when the client at whatever level they are in the pyramid is talking with somebody in the sales team, it's going to be a consistent message. Now, this should result in increased win rates because you'll have a better feel for what the client's true needs are. Improve client satisfaction because the process will be more frictionless and seamless. And also through the improved relationships and consistent experiences, the client will want to come back. We want that pull from them. We don't want to have to push. I never would want to have to make a sale because I've pushed it on somebody. That's not going to be a success. I want them to feel like it's what they really want and what they really need, and then they'll keep coming back. So that was one question. And the other question that's along some of the same lines because of the theme of the buyer focus, somebody wrote in and said, SEs in our company, SEs are typically brought in too late in the sales process. Often when an RFP, so for anybody that doesn't know, request for proposal, could be a request for proposal or for information or a request for quote, that's already been issued, forcing the SEs to try to catch up quickly on the client's needs and the competitive landscape, which makes doing a demo or anything else more difficult. So the issues they said that this is causing is they're experiencing longer sales cycles because of all that churn and, you know, sort of trying to fight through it. Reduced ability to influence the buying process since they're only involved at very late in the process and onward. And lower win rates due to reactive rather than proactive engagement. What can be done about it? So once again, I would say that the focus needs to be to shift to the buyer. And think about this for a minute. Wherever that RFP or RFQ happened, and when they give it to you, if that's when you get involved as a sales team, something happened prior to that that made them want to do the request for proposal. They didn't just think of that overnight that, oh, we need to do a request for proposal. So my suggestion is, as a team, again, together, and even more, I'd say it's the sales responsibility, try to move left in the buying process and find out what caused that RFP to happen. What are they really trying to do? And I think encouraging the SE involvement earlier, wherever you have the possibility to move left in the process, to be involved with discovery and needs analysis is important, again, because you will each see something a little bit differently. And then this is where, whenever you are engaged and you're asking the questions and doing the discovery, my concept of selling really begins at that point, but I don't mean pushing the product. I don't mean selling it as in trying to force it. What I mean is ask the leading questions that help somebody uncover more about what they're trying to do. Even if it's an RFP or an RFQ late in the game, ask the questions about where did this come from and what are the business objectives. That will give you more insight to who's doing it and why they're doing it. So again, thanks for that. By the way, the outcomes should be, you know, mutually beneficial outcomes. Influencing the decision criteria will allow better qualification and therefore shorter sales cycles and higher win rates, because you'll be able to move through it instead of churning and guessing what's going on. So there's more solutions like that in my book, the same name as the show, Making Seamless Sales. Really quick, as we begin to wrap up here, thank you everybody for being here. Next week's show, episode 5, is with Anil Shah. He's the CEO of CloudFronts, and he will share his experience helping clients with agentic AI as a Microsoft and Databricks partner. He's also who I coincidentally met. You'll hear the whole story when I needed to implement my sales methodology into the CRM system, initially in Dynamics 365 and now into Salesforce. So we'll talk about that as well. Thanks for listening or watching. If you're looking for help with consultative selling or know anybody that does need help, I'd love to find out more so we can work together to help increase your win rate, revenues, margins, and client satisfaction through keynotes, sales kickoffs, or workshops and tools that I could provide. Thank you, Jesse, for all your help today. And especially thank you, Michelle, for sharing your inspiring insights. Everybody, check out teamsalesdevelopment.com for more information. And we'll see you next week, same time, same place, Thursday nights, 7 p.m. Eastern. Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
On Frank About Health, we're not just talking healthcare. We're managing disruption and innovation. Over the last 4 years, I've taken you from epilepsy and COVID to mental health, caregiving, and now the front lines of healthcare transformation. Stay tuned for a healthier future as we bring on the innovators, professionals, storytellers, and advocates who show you how to own your healthcare every Thursday at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on talkradio.nyc.
Hi, I'm Linda Marsanico. The A Train to Sedona is a memoir about my journey to love and compassion. It's also the name of my new broadcast on Wednesdays at 12 noon. When we are spiritual, we embrace possibilities and ideas, which strengthen our mind, body, spirit, health, and wisdom. On the A Train to Sedona broadcast, I plan to interview guests who embrace these expansive practices. Join us on Wednesdays at 12 noon on Talk Radio New York City.
Hey everybody, it's Tommy D, the Nonprofit Sector Connector, coming at you from my attic. Each week here on talkradio.nyc, I host the program Philanthropy in Focus. Nonprofits impact us each and every day, and it's my focus to help them amplify their message and tell their story. Listen each week at 10 a.m. Eastern Standard Time until 11 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a conscious co-creator? Are you on a quest to raise your vibration and your consciousness? I'm Sam Liebowitz, your conscious consultant, and on my show, The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, we will touch upon all these topics and more. Listen live at our new time on Thursdays at 12 noon Eastern Time. That's The Conscious Consultant Hour, Awakening Humanity, Thursdays, 12 noon on talkradio.nyc.
Are you a high-achieving, growth-oriented leader? Are you interested in developing your authentic leadership while creating a healthy, inclusive workplace? Hi, I'm Dr. Mira Branku, host of The Hard Skills on talkradio.nyc at 5 p.m. Eastern on Tuesdays, where we discuss how leaders develop the hard skills needed to make a greater impact. We interview experts, have live coaching, and tackle these challenges. Listen to The Hard Skills on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Eastern on talkradio.nyc.
You're listening to Talk Radio NYC. Uplift, educate, empower.